Craig Beebe. I'm in Planning and Development Communications here at Metro. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to give you a couple housekeeping notes, and then I'll introduce our first afternoon. We don't have any breaks scheduled into the agenda, so if you need to take a break, feel free to get up and do that. You need some more water, some more coffee. There's plenty of snacks in the back. Please help yourself throughout the afternoon. If you need to use the restroom and you haven't found those, they're back over that way. Kind of go that way and then to your left, and you'll see them over there. And no hall passes needed or anything like that. So feel free to go whenever you need. There are agenda and handouts in the back. Help yourself to those. If you are of the tweeting inclination, you can tweet, mention Oregon Metro, or there's a hashtag up there if you want to kind of join the conversation there. Feel free. Dave Vaught is doing a PowerPoint today, and we didn't print that out. Or actually, maybe there are printouts of that. I guess there are printouts, but they're kind of in black and white, and they're kind of small. So it'll also be posted online at Metro's RTP page. That's oregonmetro.gov/RTP. You'll be able to find it there. So, and finally, we're recording the event. We have microphones. So if when time for a Q&A, if you have a question, please raise your hand so that they can bring a microphone to you, and your question can get recorded for posterity and all that. So and then we'll probably post that recording online as well after the event. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our first speaker. It's Alyssa Gertler, who's the Director of Planning and Development, who's got some welcoming remarks for you all today.
Hey, everybody. Welcoming remarks. Welcome. They give me the easy part of the agenda, as always. Craig mentioned that I am the planning director for Metro and excited to have this conversation with all of you. Looking around the room, this is a pretty great group of people to have assembled to have this conversation. I won't make any jokes about sort of the geek factor of how many of us want to sit around and talk about performance measures. This is actually really exciting to see. We in the region clearly have done a lot of work on this and have had lots of conversations around performance measures. We've learned a lot and gotten better over time in what we've been doing, but this kind of conversation shows that we have more to learn from both ourselves and others around the country who are doing and, of course, to sort of ground it in why we even care about measuring performance, which is we want to actually achieve the outcomes that we've all said we care about. We care about places. We care about people. And we want to make sure that the work we're doing is actually having the impact we intend, and if not, get smarter and more strategic about how to invest resources to accomplish the things we want to accomplish. So, yeah, it's exciting to be able to have a conversation about sort of new ways and new things that we can learn, and also to incorporate new voices. We've all worked amongst ourselves, but there's more people to engage and include, and this is a great opportunity to do that. So really excited to hear how others have done that as well. If you think about it, we all really have our place that we can talk about in this region, but can we talk about the definition of success and how we measure that success around those places? So very excited to do that. Again, I'm excited to see people here from local government, community, sort of just the wide range of interested parties around the region. I'm especially pleased that some of our elected officials, Metro Councilor Catherine Harrington, Metro Councilor Craig Dirksen, Milwaukee City Councilor Mark Gamba, somewhere here in the room, there he is. So we really have interest from the policymakers who use the performance measures to help make these policy decisions, which is fantastic. Also, we'll be using this discussion at Metro in the planning department to inform the regional transportation plan and a lot of our other policy work. So we're going to be paying attention to this and subsequent discussions that we're having about this. So we really care about what you have to say. We look forward to a lively discussion. And I think I get to both thank people who sponsored this, Coalition for a Livable Future, Upstream Public Health, Transportation for America, and I get to introduce our speaker, right? David Vaughton from the Bay Area.
So I'm just going to do a quick introduction to set some context for our guest speaker, Dave Vaughton, talking a little bit about what our existing framework is for performance measures. Because we are, again, we have an existing context, but we will be updating it as we, even though we just finished the regional transportation plan less than 2 months ago, I think, We are actually already starting about the work program and discussions about the work program for the next update. And performance measures are going to, I think, figure very prominently in updating that work program. So it's great that we can have folks from other regions come in and help us with the big picture thinking about how we approach it in our region, and maybe there are new ways and new methods and new things we can learn from Dave as he speaks today. Let's see here. Make sure I can do this. Blake, help me out here. Maybe I'll just do it the old-fashioned way. There we go. So this is just a graphic of a typical performance measure system. We have one that follows this model in our region as well. But in our RTP, we have performance measures at two levels. One is performance targets that we set, and those are really in response to the six desired outcomes that we have that we've adopted at Metro, the Metro Council has adopted to guide where we want the region to go, but relative to the transportation plan portion of that and how that transportation plan is seeking to implement those six desired outcomes that the Council has set. The second level is really a performance evaluation set of metrics relative to whatever scenario we adopt in a preferred RTP. So before we actually adopt it, we develop what we think is a preferred scenario, or we test different scenarios, and then measure performance of those scenarios relative to a set of performance measures. So we're really working at those two levels. After adoption, we go through and we do system monitoring as well, and we'll report on results of those big picture implementation of the current system before we start another round of the transportation planning update. So currently, I'm going to share with you just real kind of walk through with you real briefly the existing performance measures. We've divided them up into three sectors around the economy, the environment, and equity. But as you'll see when you look at these things, each of these measures, even though we put them in those categories, they really affect all three categories. Almost all the measures affect all three categories. But this just gives you some sort of a bit of a context. I won't read them verbatim, you can see there, but they in the economy, we are measuring or have targets around safety, congestion, and freight reliability. For the environment, the current targets are around climate change, active transportation implementation, providing basic level of infrastructure, clean air, and reduction of travel. And around equity, we have targets around affordability and access to daily needs. So that's our existing system. As we look at going to the next round of updates and how we might update our current performance measures and targets, there's a lot of context out there that's going to influence this decision-making process. We have new adopted plans, and we're adopting new plans all the time. The Regional Active Transportation Plan was recently adopted. We have a new regional safety plan that will inform these decisions. And possibly inform updating our targets. There is new activities and community input happening as we speak, and we'll have more of those in the next couple of years as we make these decisions. We have new federal requirements, and the federal Department of Transportation is putting out draft rules right now for comment on a series of new performance measures that we will be required to report to them on. And so how will we integrate those into what we want to measure at the local level as well? Of course, there's other efforts by other agencies. We're always trying to partner with and monitor what's going on elsewhere with partner agencies. We'll have a public outreach process where we'll get input from the community. And then we have lots of data and tools that will continue to evolve. We did put together a graphic for you that was in the back when you came in. This is a current list of tools that we use at Metro currently. And each of these tools serve different purposes. They can inform our process, inform the data we use to measure against our performance and to measure our progress towards targets. And these tools are under constant improvement. Well, most of them are. So we'll be looking at what the possibilities that these tools provide us, but also understanding their limitations. So with that, I would like to, I think, introduce David and get right away to him. I don't think I want to take questions now, but if you have questions, please hold them, and our staff will be happy to answer them after David's presentation.
Okay. We're, like, super excited to get to David, so we keep skipping.
Yes.
Rochelle is next.
Oh, Rochelle is next. I'm sorry. Everybody's really excited about our Bay Area partner. Sorry. Okay, thank you.
Is the slide?
I don't know.
So next we're going to invite up here Rochelle Carpenter. She's a Deputy Outreach Director with Transportation for America. Rochelle? Maybe she's not. Oh, did she use the bathroom whenever you like, too much to heart? But not when you're supposed to be speaking?
Well,
some jokes. I don't know any good transportation measure jokes, so I should think of some.
Yeah, Rochelle Carpenter is here from Transportation for America, which has sponsored this event, and so I think what we'll do is have her do some wrap-up remarks after David speaks. So, because I don't see now. So without other ado, let's bring David up here, and he's going to introduce himself a little bit more. You were right. I don't know if this is going to be. Yeah.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's really great to be here in Portland. I'm Dave Vaughton. I work with the Metropolitan Transportation Commission in Oakland, California. We're the San Francisco Bay Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. We do have responsibilities for regional transportation planning and programming as well as coordination. So Rochelle is going to give an overview of why we care about health. Why is it so important in not in but region, but regions across the country? And what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about how we go about implementing that. So I, as an analyst, my job is to really try to integrate these non-traditional measures like equity into transportation planning processes, including our performance-based planning process. And fundamentally, my work centers around performance, so I think it's a natural home for a lot of these issues and pushing beyond mobility to look at really critical issues in creating our communities. All right, so to break down my presentation today, really five components. First of all, I want to target setting, how to integrate these sort of non-traditional issues to an established performance process. So you all have a pretty robust performance process compared to many regions in the country, and hopefully some of the experiences I can share from the Bay Area might be able to help you continue to evolve that as we move into the MAP 21 era performance-based planning. Second, I want to talk a little bit about why MPOs really should be doing more on the project level as opposed to the scenario level. And some challenges we've seen in our region, and something, frankly, that a lot of mature regions in the United States are facing today. Third, I'll talk a little bit about the process for evaluating hundreds of transportation projects and how we go about that in an efficient way with limited resources. Fourth, talk about the policy outcomes and what we're trying to evolve in all this, and linking performance assessment to policy decision making and what we did with our recent plan with the highest and lowest performing projects. And then finally, I want to highlight some new tools that are available that you might be able to leverage here to expand your work on integrating health and equity into a performance framework. So first of all, target setting. So we all recognize that mobility is important, but so are issues like health, like equity, like creating vibrant places to live. And we need to incorporate those types of issues that go beyond mobility, because what gets measured really gets managed. That's the modern performance processes. We not only need to look at issues related to health, to communities, but move beyond proxies. And I'm going to talk a little bit about measure selection. And this is really critical, to move beyond proxies and try to get the root cause for why we're investing in active transportation projects or transit projects. I include this slide on a lot of performance presentations. This is a result of some research work we did, I believe, last year, where we looked at the 20 biggest metro areas in the United States. And this is why, in my mind, performance matters. So we took all of the long-range plans across the country and defined them based off of four categories. Are they road projects, transit projects, and then are they operations and maintenance of the existing system, or are they expansion? So this is summarizing it just for the breakdown between operation and expansion. And what you can see here is these 10 here on the left-hand side are spending the vast majority of their money just operating and maintaining the existing system. And that small blue sliver is in most places shrinking, right? So we're spending more and more on state of good repair, and we have less and less money to build those expansion projects to help us move the needle towards greenhouse gas reduction or getting more folks walking and bicycling. And as they get smaller and smaller, we need to be more and more selective about the projects, and we need better and better performance data. And so when we build these performance-based processes, we're going to help ourselves in prioritizing and making sure we're using those dollars as effectively as possible. Here's MTC in San Francisco. We're spending 87% of our latest plan on just operations and maintenance of the existing highway, local roads, and public transit systems. So that leaves a very small amount of money to put towards a very long list of potential transportation projects. And I'll point out on the right-hand side there is that's where you see the fast-growing locations in the country, like in Texas and in Denver. So walking you through our planning process, how do we integrate performance? Well, really, it's at all levels of the process. So we've been doing this for a decade now. We tried to infuse performance into each of these different components. So we first establish the performance targets. We do a project performance assessment, a scenario performance assessment. We assess alternatives, or we have to do an environment report for our long-range plan. So we do a performance assessment for those. And then we also monitor performance of our adopted plan. So a very similar process to what you all are doing here, trying to infuse that performance aspect. This did not happen overnight. So as you can see, these are the last four cycles. They were all performance-based plans. We started this work in the late 90s. That made its way into the first performance-based plan in 2001, which had performance measures and numeric targets related to transportation issues. It did not have a project assessment. In 2005, we launched our Transportation 2030 plan, which was the first to look at projects in a very qualitative way. In 2009, the Transportation 2035 plan did the first benefit-cost assessment in a very limited way and expanded that project analysis. And then with our latest plan, which I'll say Plan Bay Area, we really put it all together so that we had this plan which actually integrated land use for the first time. We linked to the targets, to our project assessment, and we did a very rigorous benefit-cost analysis. The other thing that's interesting on this slide is the number of projects that were analyzed. So what you can see here is not really a growth in the number of projects in the San Francisco region, but the number of projects that we were allowed to evaluate, the projects that are treated as uncommitted, meaning that they're up for debate in this process. As recently as 2009, most of our transit expansion projects were exempt from a lot of these performance analyses, and we've really pushed hard to make sure that we include the full number of projects. Projects that's not under construction or about to begin construction should go through this performance evaluation so we understand its benefits and its impacts to the region. So the plan I'm going to address today was adopted in 2013. It was the first regional plan for the Bay Area that integrates transportation, land use, housing in one unified document. It was prompted by a law known as Senate Bill 375, which requires all of the regions in California to create these integrated plans. And there are state-mandated greenhouse gas reduction targets for each region. That became the primary emphasis of the long-range plan. So we wanted to expand beyond that, not just push the boundary on greenhouse gases, but also infuse it with new performance measures and new targets. And as we're talking today, we're actually starting our next cycle of this long-range planning process and hoping to push this even further. So let's start with the target setting process and thinking about how to select good targets. So first of all, one of the reasons why the targets process was successful is we spent a lot of time on it. So we had a very long and collaborative process. We spent 6 months just identifying the 10 measures that we were going to use and the numeric targets associated with them. And we had a wide range of advocates and governmental agencies at the table. In addition to that, we spent another 8 months just figuring out how we're going to evaluate these transportation projects. So given that this is about a three-year process, you can understand that these are very intense working group arrangements. The result, the good news, was that we had a pretty broad level of support from folks for the performance for doing this sort of project assessment, both from our policymakers and from the stakeholders, both on the left and the right. So let's talk a little bit about choosing good performance measures. So my job, I focus on performance, all sorts of performance issues, monitoring, project evaluation, all this sort of thing. I think a lot about what's a good measure. I want to talk about three types of measures today for a couple issues. We're going to talk about health, we're going to talk about equity and air quality as examples. So first of all, we have your infrastructure-oriented measure. So all these types of measures are good, but they really get better as you go down the slide. So an infrastructure-oriented measure is on what we build, right? And it's easy to measure, and it's pretty easy to achieve because it's something based off exactly what we do. But it isn't necessarily the best measure of success, and it doesn't really correlate with what people care about. So in the case of public health, an infrastructure measure might be increasing this amount of miles sidewalk or bike lane miles by a certain percentage. That's a fine measure, but it's focused on the infrastructure. Perhaps if we built a bike lane in a different location, it might have a lot more riders. It might be a lot more beneficial. And so you're not capturing that when you look at a mileage-oriented measure. So then we can look at, you know, get a little bit more focused on the users and the benefits. You could do a customer-oriented measure. So that might be looking at the average time spent walking or biking. So now we're actually getting at this is how infrastructure affects people. And then third, we have, which is really the ideal measure, and you can't always get to it. Maybe in our case, we didn't have a model ready for this. This is something that we hope to do for our next plan. But to get to an objective-oriented measure, we want to look at what is the fundamental reason we want people walking and biking. That's that we want to reduce mortality and morbidity. We want to make people's health better. So as models get better, we can do better performance measures. And it's important to move beyond something like lane mileage that maybe doesn't see the difference between an urban bikeway and a facility in a lower density area with lower levels of demand. The same sort of thing goes for equity targets. So, a very common measure across the country is to look at the percent of funding spent in disadvantaged communities. But that tells us nothing about whether that benefits those people. Maybe it's just a freeway going through their backyards. So maybe we want to look at something more customer-oriented, look at the number of middle-class jobs within a certain number of minutes for those folks. But really what we want to get at, the reason why we want them to be able to get to on their jobs by transit with a certain amount of time is we want to reduce the cost burden on them. We want to make it a more affordable region so they can be successful. And that's an example of an objective measure. I'll do just one more. So for air quality, an infrastructure measure, very easy to track, would be something like the market share of zero-emission cars and trucks. A better measure would be to look at particulate emissions. And a objective-oriented measure is why do we want to reduce those emissions? We want to improve them. So just as an example, as you think about setting targets, strive objective-oriented targets. They're better because you can pursue multiple strategies to get to them, and they talk about what people care about, the goal. So coming back to Plan Bay Area, these were the 10 targets that we established. They're clustered here under the 3 E's of sustainability. You may have seen this framework used across the country. We had a very strict mandate that we would have just 10 performance targets. So this was 10 measures with a numeric target for each one. This was challenging, right? Because there's always folks always want to add to this, create a longer list. So we forced folks, if they wanted to propose a new measure, they had to propose the one they would eliminate at the same time. What's interesting here is the measures that were selected. So Compare Plan, which was more transportation oriented, there's a lot greater emphasis on the environment. We have greenhouse gases, we have greenfield impacts, we have premature fatalities from particulate emissions, collisions, walking and biking, all sorts of good stuff. We have these equity goals about affordability and housing, economy goals, and then in the upper right there, that's where transportation is. That's mode share and maintaining the existing system. Now, what's not here is what's really unique, and I talk about this at a lot of MPOs across the country, is that there's nothing about congestion here. This is our first long-range plan and one of the few in the United States that does not have congestion reduction as a goal, and there's no performance measure associated with it. In fact, under Penn Bay Area, congestion increased by approximately 2.5 times over the lifespan of the plan. So a real focus here on livability as opposed to mobility, that's a pretty major shift compared to prior planning efforts. Goal really here is to get people out of their cars, not improve travel times. Now, we also had another 5 measures that were specifically focused on equity. So we do an equity assessment for our scenarios. We do it for our projects. These were 5 measures specific to the scenarios, building off of the core measure of affordability for low-income households. We looked at issues like the risk of displacement, the vehicle miles traveled density, so that's getting at the amount of traffic levels in communities, the traffic noise and particulate impacts, and travel times, managed locations. And we call those communities of concern, so I'll be referring to that later in the presentation. So we have these performance measures. How do we leverage them? First of all, like most other MPOs, we do scenario planning. And we looked at a number of scenarios. I believe the final total was about 14 different scenarios over the lifespan of the planning process. And every time we would produce a report card for the scenarios, how do they perform against these numeric targets? Did we fall short? Did we fail to achieve them, or did we succeed? Here's a graphic showing how we infuse the performance into the process, right? So a scenario is a package of land use pattern, which varies between the different scenarios. Some of them are more growth at the periphery versus others, more growth in the core. And then transportation projects. So we do that targets assessment and equity assessment for the scenarios. We do a qualitative targets assessment, a quantitative benefit cost assessment for the projects, as well as a geographic equity assessment for the projects as well. So there's a lot going on this slide. This is a part of a report card from the environmental impact report, the 5 alternatives we studied as we saw environmental clearance for Plan Bay Area. What you can see here are the first 5 or so of the targets, the goal listed there, and then they're color-coded. Green means it was achieved, moving in the wrong direction. What we find interesting, let's see if the laser pointer works here. I guess not. What you can see here is the performance is very similar across the scenarios. So, for example, you look at something like particulate emissions, all the scenarios perform very similar. And these are places that, thank you. Where's the button? Oh, okay, thank you. So, you see these scenarios. This scenario here had a lot more growth at the periphery. This one here was more focused in suburban areas. This one had a lot of growth in the urban core, and they're all performing the same. It continues across a lot of these different alternatives. So why is this? First of all, we're spending 87% of our money maintaining the existing systems. Dollars are preserving kind of the status quo, and we have very limited try to change that status quo. The region's very mature. 7 million people live there today, 9 million in the future. Many of those folks are expected to live their lives very similarly to how they do today. I'm going to flip to the second half of the report card. You'll see the same sort of thing. Actually, I'll note here the equity target. Bay Area is actually pretty unaffordable. You may have heard about that. and actually it's projected to become even more unaffordable in the future under all of the planning scenarios. And fundamentally, what's interesting here is we had all these scenarios, and they tell us very little. How do we proceed? What should we invest in? And what we've decided to do is focus on the product graph better scenarios, because the scenarios are too blunt of an instrument. We have the transit scenario, right? We have the more highways or more suburban development type scenario. And what happens is we combine projects that are high and low performing based off of these themes. You put the high performing transit project with the low performing transit project, and they're being weighed down by the lower performers. So we want to create a package of projects that are the highest performing from all the different modal types. This is the same sort of thing for the equity measures. So what you can see here, this is comparing the low-income areas or the communities of concern for each of the measures compared to the rest of the region. And you can see that in these two scenarios, the low-income folks are experiencing worse under the proposed project. Here, for the other three measures, they're experiencing slightly better conditions than the rest of the region in year 2040. But again, the differences are minute. What do we do with this? So let me talk a little bit about how we do the project evaluation. So our goal was, let's create a better preferred and not focus so much on the scenario work and try to really delve into the projects. But doing this means we have to evaluate hundreds of transportation projects, as our region has a $200+ billion long-range plan. So there's a lot of investments to go through. Here's some pie charts showing those projects, right? So we have, there were 1,100 projects submitted to us for potential inclusion in the plan. On the right side there, a breakdown of the cost. So we had over $200 billion of projects proposed for inclusion in the plan. Now that red slice there represents the committed projects. So these are projects about to start construction. Our policymakers say, okay, these projects are going to happen. We're not going to go through a performance evaluation for them if they're about to break ground. And we've made that slice smaller and smaller over time. What we wanted to do is not just focus on all the projects equally, but focus on where the money's at. So kind of the 80-20 rule, right? Put 80% of our effort into 20% of the projects. And so we focused on that $150 billion. Those are all the capacity-increasing highway and transit investments in the San Francisco Bay Area. There are only 100 of those projects, but we wanted to do the most assessment on them, do a quantitative assessment, and then do a qualitative assessment for the remainder. We created a two-part system to do this evaluation. So first we have what we call the targets assessment. So we took those targets that we had for the scenarios, and we created a qualitative framework for evaluating every project against the targets. And then we have this benefit cost assessment, and this is where we invest most of our time, our budget, our staff, is to do the benefit cost assessment. To do this, we have to leverage a model, our activity-based travel demand model. So instead of running a scenario, we run every transportation project on its own in the travel model. So we look at a baseline scenario, we add the project in, and we see how all 7 or 9 million people in the region are affected by that project. Running the model takes about 24 hours, so it's an expensive process. And we did this for the computers we're running for months on end to crank out the results for this assessment. But the strength of it is that it forces us to challenge assumptions, perhaps. It gives us standardized data across all projects that we don't have otherwise. Instead of getting apples and oranges where one sponsor says the ridership is this, someone else uses some other model, maybe different projections or demographics, it's all standardized. And we come up with a rough benefit-cost ratio. This just shows a breakdown. So the targets assessment was a score ranging from plus 10 to minus 10, depending on how much for each of those targets you supported or adversely affected the issue area. And then for the benefit cost, we quantified a wide variety of issues. And so you can see here how we fit in for the first time public health impacts. We looked at the health impacts from more active transportation or less active transportation. We looked at issues like emissions, collisions, time, cost. We added in parking and auto ownership costs for the first time, which is a pretty big addition, as well as noise. And we take those benefits, divide them by the capital costs and the net operating and maintenance costs for a project. I'm not sure if some of you in the back of the room can see all this. so I'll try to explain what we're looking at. I'm going to show a couple of these bubble charts. So we produce reams of data from this. So we have, you can go to our website, there's a 180-page report on all this with tables and tables on all the projects. But I'm going to show you three slides. And these bubble charts summarize those results. So for every major road project or transit project, we plotted them here. So this is on the horizontal axis, this is the targets. So if you are to the left of here, you are having an adverse impact on those 10 very sustainability-oriented targets that our commission adopted at the beginning of the process. On the right side, you support them to some extent. On the vertical axis, you have the benefit-cost ratio. So this is the level of cost effectiveness of the project. And then the bubble size represents the scale of the benefits, so kind of the magnitude of the project. So here we're looking at all the road projects. We don't have a lot of highway expansion projects in the Bay Area, but what you can see are some of the more operational projects like auxiliary lanes, intelligent transportation systems, so technology to improve our highways, pricing. We have a proposal to build a London-style cordon toll around San Francisco, which would not only reduce congestion but also funding for transit improvements. And on the left side here, you see some of the capacity-increasing projects that had more adverse impacts on our targets. They're maybe allowing for additional sprawl at the edge of the region, as well as our express lane network, which is a network of high-occupancy toll lanes. Now, all those road projects, they're all showing up with generally high benefit-cost ratios, particularly up here on ITS and pricing. Now, let's switch to transit. We actually have so many transit projects. If we put them all on the slide, they would take up too much space and be too cluttered. So this is just selected transit projects. And what you can see here is, again, there's quite a distribution. So all the transit projects are very, very supportive of our, you know, sustainability targets. That's no surprise. But right, very cost-effective projects like BART Metro, which is a proposal to increase frequencies in the core parts of our heavy rail system, as well as bus rapid transit lines, infill stations, increased frequencies on urban buses. Really, a lot of the cost-effective, low-capital improvements that can really improve the ridership experience for our core transit system. And down here at the bottom, you start seeing some of the more capital-intensive projects. And then down here, some transit projects that fell below that critical benefit-cost ratio of 1. And I'll talk about the implications of that for these projects in a minute. Now, this is why we want, again, the project. So this is the summary of all the projects. And we add up the projects of a certain type. What do we see? Again, we see the issue of the scenario challenge, right? So those transit projects had a very nice distribution of benefit-cost ratios. When we add them all together, those low-performing transit projects drag down the average. And so you see these bubbles down here for transit. On the road side, it's a little clearer. You can see the high performance of pricing and freeway performance. ITS, as well as road efficiency, and then the highway expansions here to the left. Now, one of the benefits of doing these sorts of performance assessments on the project level is you get really interesting data about a lot of different benefits, not just a benefit-cost ratio. And I'll get back to the issue of health and these non-traditional measures that you can add into a project. Here we have some benefits related to active transportation. So I just pulled out here the top three and bottom three projects for cost effectiveness for active transportation. Now, our projects that we're focusing on here are projects greater than $50 million, so we're not talking about little bike paths, which we're really talking about transit projects, highway projects, what do they do? Now, what you can see here, the top three projects, we have projects like the BART Metro and some of the pricing projects. We actually have data, a ballpark estimate of the number of people that become physically active as a result of constructing the project. We can develop a cost-effectiveness ratio. Interestingly, with the BART Metro project, it's a large upfront capital cost that generates sufficient cost savings that actually, from an annual basis, it actually generates for BART to implement the project. And so the cost-effectiveness is infinite. Now, we might find it a bit surprising on the least cost-effective side. So when we look at some of the least cost-effective projects, the usual suspects show up. You know, a lot of the highway projects at the region's periphery that are detracting from bicycling or walking. We also have some transit projects here. The least cost-effective project turned out to be a project called the Transit Effectiveness Project, or the TEP. It's actually one of the highest performing benefit cost projects in the region. And it is a regional priority. It's not good for active transportation, but good for the city. So it would boost frequencies on Muni, which is our urban bus system. It serves half of all the air in the region and only serves the city of San Francisco. Now, why would this project attract transportation? Well, one of the interesting things about BART versus Muni is BART is a heavy rail system. It runs at 79 miles per hour, and it is competitive with the automobile. And so when we improve BART or we add new BART stations or improve frequencies, we tend to get people out of their cars. In the case of Muni, Muni runs at about 7 to 8 miles per hour in San Francisco. I regularly outbike Muni. There's also a series in the paper known as Man versus Muni, where a man tries to walk faster than Muni, and he wins about half the time. So in the case of the TEP, it would actually improve Muni, get more people on Muni at the expense of bicycling. So it makes Muni time competitive with the bike. And so what we see there is a reduction of physical activity as a result. The same thing happens with this other bus rapid transit project in the East Bay area. Again, a reduction in physical activity from the project. So this is just interesting. It helps inform us. This is just one piece of the puzzle, but it helps us understand the health implications. It doesn't mean we shouldn't build the TEP. It's a very good project. Moving on to equity, there's this other component of our assessment, which had a little bit more tangential role, where we looked at projects and whether they provided access, improved equitable outcomes for disadvantaged communities. So we did a mapping exercise. We took all the projects in the region, and we gave them an equity target score, and we looked at whether they provided access. The purple areas here are the communities of concern. This is for San Francisco. But we created these maps for every county in the area just to help highlight projects serving those areas. And what you can see here is, at least in San Francisco, most of the projects do provide some level of access to those communities. So we had done this sort of project assessment in the past, but you know, as an analyst, it's all very fascinating, but at the end of the day, you really want to try to change outcomes for the region. And we put a lot of effort this time around just to reserve 6 months before we created the preferred scenario for our plan to adjust the scenario, to include more high-performing projects, to make sure those all got into our plan, and to try to remove as many of the low-performing projects. That way we optimize that scenario and the greatest bang per buck. This grid here shows some sample projects from each of the categories. So we created a threshold for high performance. You had to have a benefit-cost ratio of at least 5, and you had to have a strong target score. So that meant you had to really be performing well on both of those evaluations. On the low-performing projects, you either had a benefit-cost ratio below 1, or you had a negative target score. So that's an or condition, so either or. And then any project that didn't meet either of those criteria, we called those moderate performing projects. So the goal here was to use our capabilities as a regional agency to help make sure that those projects in the high performing category, that all of those had funding in our plan. None of those were being left behind. And then for the low performing projects, focus on the worst of the worst, the kind of the worst 10% and the best 10%, and leave the rest to the counties to help prioritize so they get that regional input or the local input. So some examples of the projects that showed up in each of these categories. Up there you can see the BART Metro project, which I mentioned before, Bus Rapid Transit, ITS. In the middle performing category, you have projects like the Downtown Extension, which is we have a commuter rail line that currently serves about 1 mile short of downtown San Francisco, and they want to tunnel it into downtown. Frequency improvements on urban buses and the express lane network. And while low performing, there were really two types of projects. You had your transit projects that were low ridership corridors. So these tended to be either very high cost or projects in low density areas where the transit demand just doesn't exist. As well as we just have freeway widening projects of any significant size, and those are at the periphery of the region. In fact, the picture there is one where they want to widen the road through a garlic field. So why do we want to how do we look at these projects and give them a chance to make their case? So we know that no performance assessment is perfect. We wanted to allow for a process where we say, here are our results. You can make a case for why your project is going to be included in the plan. If you're low performing, if you're high performing, we got you covered. If you're middle performing, you guys, you know, work it out locally. Let's deal with these low performing projects. So in the past, we had allowed folks to write letters to our board, making a case. They would use all sorts of arguments. They mentioned how much is funded by transportation sales tax dollars, which is a pretty important issue in our region. Every county has a transportation sales tax, and the voters approve those. You need a 66.6% majority to get that approved. Obviously, there's a lot of voter support behind those projects. This time around, we wanted to say, we want you to focus on what's the weakness in our assessment. So what did we miss? If we had captured this benefit or we had looked at this issue more carefully, maybe your project wouldn't have been flagged as low performing. So we set up these criteria. These were adopted by our board. All these different steps, we went to board adoption. And we said some of the known weaknesses of our travel demand model, it was used to evaluate these projects for benefit costs. If you can prove how omitting one of these issues, adding one of them back in, get your benefit cost ratio above one, then it's okay. We'll move you out of that low performing category. And also we have some federal requirements, which we all, you guys do as well, related to social justice, equity issues, as well as air quality issues that we have to be cognizant of and sometimes override the results of our assessment. So we actually had a lot more low performing projects than high performing. We had 13 high performers. We made sure those were all were funded. These were the low performers, or about, 34 of them total. And this is what happened to those low performing projects. So we said, you have to not only write this letter, our staff will review it, we'll make a proposal to our board. You can come argue your case in front of our commission, and each project will be approved or rejected on a case-by-case basis. So really setting up kind of an appellate court system, as our executive director likes to refer to it. And what you see here, so we have 12 projects were withdrawn by the sponsors, so they didn't want to go through this process. They said, we'll just not be part of this plan. And that means they, if you're not in the plan for construction, you can't build the project over the four-year lifespan of that long-range plan. Another 13 projects rescoped their projects. So they agreed to either just do environmental studies, which means they, can't build the project in the short term. They agreed to fully fund the project locally. And when you do that, we say, if you're going to 100% fund it with your own dollars, go right ahead. You can build that project. That's a high bar hit, especially since a lot of local measures, 10 or 20% of the project funding. And one project actually even changed its scope. The Smart Commuter Rail Line, which if you've been down to the Bay Area, we have wine country north of San Francisco. This was a extension of a rail line under construction that was expected to serve about 200 riders for 20 miles of track. And costs about $200 million. And this project was scaled back in response to being flagged low performing, so it will not. The project really has changed its scope as a result of our assessment. One project was going to go to that appellate court, and the night before the meeting, they settled out of court and decided to pursue just an environmental study for the project. That was a highway widening project. So both of the highway widening projects in the region were scaled back to environmental studies. And with the eight projects did have their compelling cases approved, six of those were related to those communities of concern. So folks would argue that this transit project is essential because it's serving a minority community, a low-income community. They have no other options for mobility. We want to make sure that they have that option, even though the benefit-cost ratio is low. So I want to conclude by talking a little bit about how to add in these sorts of health and equity measures into a scenario or project-based framework for performance. It's a really exciting time to be working on performance. I know we're incredibly busy at MTC. I'm sure the Metro staff are as well. With the federal requirements coming into place under MAP 21, there will be a whole new set of performance requirements, which we have to incorporate into our long-range plans, into our TIPS, the short-range programming documents. as well as some things we have to track annually and set targets for. And that's going to be a whole new ballgame for a lot of MPOs. These expectations from the national level have really grown, and at the regional level they've grown as well. But there is no mandate to go beyond these, you know, the basic mobility measures. The federal measures focus almost entirely on the highway system, although there are some that have lots of agreement with our plans, like safety and infrastructure preservation. There's also a lot of measures focused on congestion, travel time reliability, freight movement. And there's no measures related to transit beyond state of good repair and safety. So there's no measures related to actually moving people on transit, which at least in our region, and I'm sure in yours, that's a very important issue to be cognizant of. So it's really up to the states and the regions to push forward on these issues. And fundamentally, if you just follow what's going on in Washington, D.C., it's clear that the performance measures, thinking about these sort of progressive measures, they're not going to be happening anytime soon. The feds are busy just implementing the basic measures that have been included in MAP 21, and it's unlikely that the new Congress would be really adding in a lot of the stuff we're talking about. So I want to talk about one model that could be helpful. In our last plan, we did not have this model available. It was developed in 2011. It actually was developed in the UK. It's called ITHIM. It's the Integrated Transport and Health Impact Model. And the California Department of Health, as well as some folks in the UK, customized it for the United States and actually came up with used data for California to calibrate it. And it's now being used across the country to look